You are listening to The Quarterdeck with your host, Benjamin Strong.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from Amver.com, and welcome to another edition of the Quarterdeck podcast. We're in New London, Connecticut, at the International Ice Patrol headquarters, to talk a little bit about the Ice Patrol, and I'm happy to say that I'm joined by Commander Lisa Mack, who's the commander of the Ice Patrol. How are you, ma'am?
Good. Good morning, Ben.
Thanks for joining us. And I've got Senior Chief John Lazader, who's the tactical commander. How are you, Senior Chief?
I'm doing good.
And Petty Officer Megan Sanks, who's the public affairs officer. Welcome.
Thanks.
Glad that that you both could join us, along with Commander Mack. And Megan and John, you're both marine science technicians, correct?
That's correct.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit about what that is as we go along. But for the Amver community, for the commercial shipping community, the Ice Patrol is actually pretty important, specifically folks that are sailing in the North Atlantic. Tell me a little bit about what does the Ice Patrol do?
Well, we are a single mission unit. Our mission is to monitor iceberg danger near the Grand Banks of Newfoundland, which is the Northwest Atlantic Ocean, and we provide an iceberg limit to the maritime community. So basically provide a line in the ocean that mariners can navigate around and avoid ice.
So you provide maps of ice?
Essentially,
icebergs,
yes.
And things like that. And why is there an ice patrol?
Well, like Amver, we can trace our roots back to the Titanic disaster in 1912 that really galvanized the international community to provide an organized service to provide that information. Prior to Titanic, it was pretty ad hoc. Ships would, get iceberg locations from other ships.
Okay.
So this really organized international cooperative way the ability to provide that information.
And who else does the U.S. cooperate with? Who else is involved in this?
Well, our main partner is the Canadian Ice Service with Canada. They do, we have a partnership called the North American Ice Service. So we actually just recently have joined to provide one product between those services. But the International Ice Patrol was actually formed by the IMO, International Maritime Organization, under the SOLAS Convention.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously several countries signatory to that convention.
Okay, but essentially it's Coast Guard aircraft that are, and we'll get into a little bit about how it works, but it's the Coast Guard. Well, let's just get into that. And Senior Chief, you've had two tours here, so you're,
yes,
Mr. Ice, Mr. Freeze. how do you guys do your job? How does this whole process work?
Basically, we've kind of split the season or the year up between responsibilities between ourselves and the Canadian Ice Service. And during our portion of that responsibility between February and July, we deploy aircraft up to St. John's, Newfoundland, where mm-hmm. we base our operations, our flight operations. And from there, we do sorties, find out where the icebergs are, find out where they're not. And that we relay that information back to our operations center here in New London. And from that, we create the products using a model and a forecast drift and deterioration model, create our chart, create a text bulletin, and get that out.
So let me go back a little bit. There's an ice season. There's actually a season.
Yeah, there's climatology tells us that between January, we start to see ice coming down the Labrador coast in the Labrador Current, and that persists until usually June. Each year can be very different as far as how much ice mm-hmm. makes it to the Grand Banks of Newfoundland. So that is something we monitor each year.
So is it possible then that icebergs could be floating or pieces of ice? Now, when I think of an iceberg, I think of iceberg dead ahead, the thing that sank Titanic. So you've got big, giant pieces that you're tracking. You've got small pieces, and you're doing this visually. So there's a Coast Guard C-130 that's flying around, and you're, looking out the windows.
We do have visual observers, but our principal means of detection is actually radar.
Oh, okay.
So we use a radar system that allows us to see through the clouds, pick the icebergs out, and identify them. Size, and then get that information back to our command center here.
Now, do you give them names, or do they get identifying numbers? I know that sounds naive, but...
Usually we don't, we reserve that for seeing them visually, but yes, we can describe them as a pinnacle, dry dock,
okay.
Tabular, and so on.
Okay. And how far south, I mean, what's the furthest south you've had a iceberg?
Actually, I was just looking at a few annual reports, and they actually had an iceberg at 39 north, which is actually south of the latitude of Cape Cod, you know.
Wow.
So the Labrador Current is what gets them that far south, and the Titanic was about 41, 30 north.
So the Labrador Current must stay rather cold then, in order to keep these from melting.
Because it comes from the east coast of Labrador, and
right.
It basically follows the contour of the Grand Banks.
Okay.
And essentially directly south on the Grand Banks, so that's how we get icebergs in that area.
Wow. And so you use radar imagery, and you use visual tracking, and as you mentioned, that information comes back here, and I'm sure it's laid over like through GIS, and you produce a product. So along with, and you actually fly an aircraft. I'm looking at, you know, the benefit of the folks who are listening. You guys all have wings on, so you guys fly around in the aircraft as well.
Yes, and the reason we wear the wings is there's a qualification process that we go through, aviation mission specialist, and that qualification process allows us to wear the wings.
So not only are you producing products here and doing day-to-day kind of office work, but you're heading up to St. John's and doing tours of duties on the aircraft as well.
That's correct.
Yeah, really all the active duty personnel split their time between St. John's and the Operations Center. So everybody does everything.
How many are there here? How many people do you have?
We have 16 total. We have two civilians who are our technical specialists and provide some long-term continuity. We have an oceanographer who's been here for almost three decades. So he's our long-term guy. And then we have an IT specialist. She's been here for about 5 years. And then the military, obviously, are the rotators.
So January to about June is kind of the ice season?
Right. Typically, February is where is the line we draw between the Canadians and us. January is kind of where we're definitely gearing up for it.
Okay.
As far as training and all that, but February through...
And so I guess it would be the fall, say, October, November, to the February cutoff is when Canada's kind of got the lead as far as tracking things.
I think the distinction there is February to July is when icebergs can be on the Grand Banks.
Okay.
Generally, other times of the year, they're restricted to Canadian domestic waters.
Right.
So that's why we have that split in responsibility.
So it becomes a lot more critical then in the spring time frame when you guys have responsibility.
Right, more critical for the transatlantic mariners.
Right, correct. Right. And what kind of, I mean, you know, like, I'll take Megan. So you're here in the office for a week or two, and then you deploy up to St. John's, or how does...
Well, it really depends on the severity of the season.
Right.
We can send them everywhere from twice a month to once a month, you know, or possibly more often if it was a really severe season.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have supplemental information that we get people that will report it just by ship, or there's another provincial airlines flies up there a lot and mm-hmm. they'll send their information to us. But yeah, it's technically about 8 days that you usually have a window for when you're up there, and you try to get, you know, 3 to 4 flights at least while you're up there so you can get a good idea of what the population is and where mm-hmm. your limit setters are. And then the rest of the time we're back here, and, you know, it really is a fairly seamless operation since everybody does everything. It's never like one person doesn't have a good understanding of what's going on in
right.
the other half.
Right. Now, how long is a typical mission? Because everybody's going to say, oh, you're flying. It sounds glamorous. And, you know, people think, oh, it's like the Air Force. You're back at the club after a mission. But I suspect it's probably not that romantic.
The flights can be long. We plan for 1,700 miles. And
wow.
That puts us at about 7 hours, 7+ hours.
So it's essentially like flying transatlantic, but unpressurized. This is an aircraft that perhaps may have the ramp down and...
No, typically it's pressurized,
oh, okay.
And the only time we have the ramp down is if we're doing some type of oceanographic operation,
mm-hmm.
dropping a one of our drifter buoys out of the back, and then we're down at 400 feet or so.
Wow.
To do that. So
it can get kind of dicey then. It can be challenging.
I don't know if I'd use the word dicey, but
okay.
it's definitely you know, there's lots of procedures that we stick to make it a safe operation.
So one of the additional features that you'll do, though, is you can actually put out like a datum buoy or a tracking buoy. That does it use AIS or send a satellite signal up?
It uses satellites to send a signal back to a central server, and we get mm-hmm. the information from
right.
that.
And just for drift modeling, or can you actually, like you'd harpoon an elephant, can you harpoon an iceberg and track it that way, or do you?
That's a good question. We actually have both. We use the drifter buoys for currents, and then we don't do it very often, but we have compact air-launched ice beacons called Calebs that we can throw on an iceberg.
Wow.
I'm glad Commander remembered that acronym.
How often do you do that?
Not very often,
okay.
Primarily because most of the targets are fairly small.
We're right.
Like a small iceberg is about 15 meters long. It's pretty hard to hit that. But last year we had an ice island that came down the Labrador coast, which was very large, and we managed to get it on the iceberg, but it didn't transmit because it fell in some water. But it is a good tool to have,
right.
particularly for the larger targets.
So you've got a pretty big toolbox in as far as tracking ice and ensuring the accuracy of this for the commercial maritime sector.
Mm-hmm.
So do I have to pay for this? Is there a website that I can go to? This is the kind of thing that we can put in our show notes that folks can go back. Does this cost money if I'm a fisherman
cost money. It's
okay.
Basically an international service.
Okay.
We have our own website, but our products are distributed primarily through Navaria 4 warnings.
Okay.
And that was a recent change for us.
Mm-hmm.
We used to do that independently. Now we're part of the Navaria 4 system. So in the Navaria 4 broadcast window, you'll see our product. And that's a text product. We also do a graphical product that's put out by HF Facsimile.
Okay.
And all those things are available in various sources on the web.
Now, you mentioned, Megan, you mentioned before that ships and aircraft can report ice things that they see, icebergs, and I've heard folks call them growlers and bits, and there are all kinds of salty terms for the, and I, you know, at the risk of minimizing the danger of these things, they are pretty dangerous. I mean, a ship that gets hold, and a good example of that was the cruise ship Explorer that sank in Antarctica. They got hold by a bergy bit, and ice can cause more problems than just holing a ship or sinking a ship. They create a lot of fog. There can be a host of different navigational challenges when it comes to navigating through waters that have pieces of ice in them. So AMVR participants send messages to us, you know, either through email or facsimile or HF or, you know, through the Inmarsat system. If I'm sailing along and I see that there's an iceberg somewhere and I've got my position, can I send that message in to you guys? Is there a mechanism to do that?
Yes, there is. And we've actually modified this a little bit recently. There is a Inmarsat code 42 where people can report through that system. That will come to us. It also goes to the Marine Communications Traffic Service in St. John's that if they detect an iceberg, they get a report of an iceberg outside the limit, they send a notice to shipping, and then that automatically triggers a Navaria 4 warning.
Okay.
And ships can also report directly to any Canadian Marine Communications and Traffic Service.
Okay.
Those are the primary methods.
Okay, great. So there's really, besides, you know, you guys who are in aircraft and other aircraft that are reporting in ships, it's a pretty comprehensive method of tracking the ice.
Mm-hmm.
I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, there are a lot of people saying that the ice is receding, And while you guys aren't responsible for tracking, say, the Northern Sea Route in Russia or the Northwest Passage itself, which is, you know, a lot further north in the area that you're covering, do you find that there are more bits and pieces out there now? Or does that vary season to season? Do you see that there's been an effect by the climate?
We actually have a lot of variability in our seasons anyway. And I think the caveat to understand when you're trying to look at climate change along with what we see in our area is that the icebergs that come to us have a 1 to 3 year journey that they go on before we even see them in our op area. And on that 1 to 3 year journey, there's so many places that they can, you know, stop, get lost, get grounded, stay in a bay.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount that we see in our op area doesn't really correlate to any kind of change that we see in the climate. So generally speaking, we don't really say that we see anything.
Right. And you're not climatologists. Your focus is to keep the shipping lane safe and alert people to where these pieces are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that, you know, we talked about the history a little bit. It was because of Titanic and IMO and the need to have a clearer understanding of where these ice pieces are. And the genesis being Titanic, this is the 100th anniversary of Titanic. How is the Ice Patrol involved in any kind of activities surrounding Titanic?
We are. We every year have done a memorial wreath drop. I actually went back and looked at the annual reports. The first incident of that was in 1923.
Wow.
So a long history of recognizing our roots that way.
Mm-hmm.
The Titanic Historical Society has actually provided a wreath for that drop since the early 1970s, so we have a good relationship with them. We're actually doing something special this year that they organized with a couple of Titanic museums, that visitors that went to the museum carried a rose petal with them, and at the end they collected the rose petals. So we're going to be dropping all of those rose petals, and it was a way for individuals to kind of commemorate the sinking. So that is in addition to the few wreaths that we'll drop, and that'll be over the Titanic site.
Wow. Now that will, and I know that there are some cruises that will probably be around the area. I mean, this is garnering some pretty significant media attention, more so now probably after the Costa Concordia, which was not holed by an iceberg and it was in the Mediterranean, but a lot of people are finding parallels between Titanic and the fact that there are incidents of, you know, cruise ship sinkings that occur today. Certainly from the Amber side, you know, we're aware of, you know, we see ships that there's probably a ship a week that sinks, again, not related to being holed by icebergs. Mm-hmm. And as the ice is receding, there's more emphasis and more focus on vessel traffic in what was once ice-covered waters. Your product probably becomes more important than ever. Is there an effort to expand ice patrolling? Are you aware of similar missions that, you know, maybe the Russians are doing, or that the Europeans are doing, or that may be occurring north, you know, through the Northern Sea Route? Or are you guys pretty much it around the world?
There certainly is interest, particularly north of Labrador,
mm-hmm.
As Canada has some expansion of shipping up there. And that was part of the impetus for the North American Ice Service and our move to Navigable forewarnings,
right.
So that we're covering more of that area with, mm-hmm. with those warnings. And I think the vision of the future is eventually that the North American Ice Service will cooperate with the Danish look at icebergs around Greenland, that we would have one comprehensive product for the North Atlantic.
Interesting. I'm sure that this will become a more important topic as, again, as shipping increases in the northern latitudes. I recall a comment once I heard from a gentleman who works for FedNav, which is a big Canadian shipping mm-hmm. company, Tom Patterson, and we've done an interview with him. I'll include a link back to that interview. Ice-free waters or doesn't necessarily mean no ice. And he's, you know, there is a lot of attention on folks who think that they may shorten the route between Asia and Europe, or, you know, one end of the Pacific to the Atlantic. And just because it may not be frozen over where you need an icebreaker doesn't mean that you won't have fog and bergy bits, and you have to have additional people on your bridge, and that you've got a really slow steam because, you know, you may get hold. And I think that the need for the shipping community to access your product will probably increase as the years go on. So I just want to say thanks again for taking some time to sit down with us. I think that your product is probably more important than ever. I wish you a lot of luck in the 100th anniversary of Titanic as you memorialize what occurred on April 15th. And we'll have links to all of your products so that the shipping community can access that through our website. And we'll make sure that you know, that they'll be able to get a hold of your website. So, Commander, Petty Officers Sanks and Luzader, thank you very much for joining us. I'm Ben Strong from Amber.com.
You have been listening to The Quarterdeck. Learn more about the Amber program at Amber.com. The Quarterdeck theme song is called Botany Bay by the Blackguards. Available at MusicAlley.com, or follow the link in our show notes.
I'm on the way down to the quay where the good ship and anchor lays, to command the gang of navvies they told me to engage. Well, I thought I'd stop in for a pint before I went away, but I take a trip on an emigrant ship to the shores of...